to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show. It's Monday, the start of another week, and boy, it looks like it's just going to be another completely weird one. Now, before I get into the show here, as you know, when I come across equipment like Microsoft Windows or something that doesn't work, I'm not shy at all about, complaining and bashing them. And so, in fairness, when I stumble across something that really does the job well, I feel obligated that I got to let you know about this, too. This comes under the category of unsolicited plug. I don't know these people who make this. They're not paying me. They're not advertisers on the website, but I stumbled across them over the weekend. Because my wife and I have to drive to a lot of places we don't know, and because, you know, maps are a little, well, unfriendly, I went ahead, I finally spent the money on one of these GPS navigation systems for the iPhone. And I read all the reviews and I looked at all of them and I finally picked one called Navigon. Now, they make dedicated hardware GPS units that go on the dashboard of your car, but they also sell an iPhone version of the same software, which, you know, it's a lot of money. You know, it's very inexpensive, and I had some trepidation about getting it, you know, with our current economic situation. But I went ahead and I got it, and I tested it this morning. I went out driving around my errands. This thing worked so well. It's intuitive interface. You know, I just tapped in where I wanted to go, and yes, where I was going, I already knew the directions, but this thing is guiding me, and it shows the map, and it's got the little sexy lady voice that's saying, you know, in another 200 feet, turn left and right. And just as a test, I threw it a ringer. I deliberately made a wrong turn and went another direction. And the reason I did that is on another GPS mapping system that I'd had a chance to play with. Belong to somebody else. And yes, admittedly, this was a little while ago. If you got off the generated track, you had to stop and reset it. Now, this one, this Navigon, it immediately corrected and said, okay, you made a wrong turn, but go up to the next block and turn left and blah, 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 blah. And yes, I've only had it for a day or so, but so far, you know, I'm absolutely in love with it. And so if you know the Navigon people, tell them I pat them on the top of the head because they did a really good job. We've got so much stuff to talk about, but I am informed we actually have a caller waiting on the line right now. Our phone number, of course, 866-582-9933. Jared's in the control room, and he's already answering phone calls. So let us go to Clint in Nevada. Aloha, Clint. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind this afternoon?
Well, Mike, I just wanted to say that I was the guy that sent the Harry Reid letter yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that something?
And everything I've ever heard from Harry Reid has been very disappointing. Even our pipe fitters and plumbers and pipe fitters local is refusing to support him this year. And that's come from the International in Washington. So he's very unpopular now. But what I really wanted to talk about was doing a little Obama bashing.
Okay, before we get on to the Obama bashing, I want to finish up on this Harry Reid, because for people who don't know what we're talking about, this caller sent me a letter that he received from Harry Reid's office, in which Harry Reid appears to, on the letterhead of the United States Senate, confirm that Israel has a nuclear program. And he dismisses it by saying, well, it's of no threat to the United States. That's not the point. Under the Symington Amendment to the Foreign Appropriations Act, the United States is not allowed to give any financial assistance, any trade credits, any of this stuff, to any country with nuclear weapons technology that is not a signer of the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty.
Could I put
and
in
is
a
not
request,
allowed...
Mike?
Say again?
Could I put in a request?
Sure.
You put a flashback link to the Symington Amendment? Because I'd like to send it to Mr. Reid.
Okay, it's in the letters section right now, because somebody else responding to your letter sent that in and said, here's the actual text, because apparently
right.
Israel has already come out with their spin on this, saying that, okay, we didn't really build our own nuclear weapons. We got them someplace else. Maybe they went down to IKEA and bought a bunch of nuclear weapons or something. And since we didn't make them ourselves, that makes us exempt from Symington. No, if you read the actual Symington text, merely being in possession of the weapons means you're in possession of that kind of technology. And we know from Mordecai Vanunu, they're doing their own enrichment and their own assembly underneath the Dimona reactor. So they're trying to spin the thing. So another reader sent in the exact text of the Symington Amendment. There is no gray area there. It is illegal for the United States government to be sending your tax dollars to Israel as long as they have nuclear weapons technology, refuse to sign the NPT, and refuse to allow inspections, which they did twice this year. The Obama administration issued a request for them to sign and allow inspections, and the United Nations General Assembly passed a resolution asking Israel to sign the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty and permit inspections. And these are the same inspections that Iran allows all the time. They're over there inspecting this new backup enrichment facility right now.
I guess, that leads to that leads to another request. I think you already posted it, that they already are accepting U.N. inspections. Iran is already doing this, so
They've been doing it all along. Iran is playing by the rules. They signed the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty. The IAEA is inspecting everything that they're doing, and they have found no evidence of weapons development. All of this stuff about Iran being bad people is coming from Israel. And I put up another article. Hey, my turn.
Okay, go ahead.
Got to follow the rules here. I'm the benevolent dictator of this show. There's another article up at the front of whatreallyhappened.com basically underscoring the fact that all of this information that purports to claim that Iran is this horrible threat that's building all these nuclear weapons, it's all coming from Israel. And we've been down this road before, because back when it was Iraq was the bad people, all of the negative information that we got about Iraq building, you know, biological weapons and nuclear weapons and all the rest of the stuff, it was all coming from Israel. They had a spy planted in the Pentagon Office of Special Projects or Special Plans. Larry Franklin, he's gone to jail for that. This was all set up by Paul Wolfowitz. They were operating outside of any kind of congressional control. They were getting all these people from AIPAC and all these Israeli military officers coming in all the time. And it was from this one office that all of the so-called evidence to support war in Iraq came from. You know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. We have been led down this primrose path once before, actually twice before, by Israel. And now they're trying to do it again here in Iran. And, you know, our government's all ready to go for it because they need a war and they think war is good for business and so forth and so on. But we, the American people, have to realize it is Israel that is laying all this false information before us and say, look, you've got to believe this and go kill the Iranians for us. And if you don't believe us, you're just a filthy anti-Semite.
Can I bring up another topic?
Please do.
It wasn't Obama bashing, it was Bono bashing. I was watching the YouTube deal on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And you're talking to an old U2 fan from back in the 80s. I'm 52 years old.
Mm-hmm. And whippersnapper.
Yeah, I know, youngster. But anyways, Bono's, and I saw a concert here in Las Vegas, and he dedicated the show to the U.S. military. That's when I walked out of the show and haven't thought much of U2 since. Mm-hmm. But last night he implied, you know, oh, Tehran, do you hear us? You know, the very implying that it's like they're very establishment. They're implying that, you know, the official 9/11 story is true, and Tehran needs to comply to the United States, and, you know, you're getting ready to start World War III. And, yeah, it's kind of a Bono bashing is what I'm doing here.
I hear you on that one, and you need to understand that there are a lot of stars and celebrities who understand that if they go along with the government agenda, it will help their career, and if they oppose the government agenda, it goes against their career. Look what happened to the Dixie Chicks. Look what happened to Rosie O'Donnell. You know, these are people of courage, and not everybody in Hollywood is a person of courage. They'll sell out as quickly as they can if they think it's going to advance their career.
Yeah, Charlie Sheen's the exception, rather than the
rule. Well, we don't know what is going to happen to his career, but, you know, so far so good, and he's got a name, and he's got his fame, and he's got what is called politely in Hollywood FU money, which means that he doesn't care if he never works again. But he's out there to make a point, and, you know, he's doing a wonderful, wonderful job. All right, we got to let you go. We're at the end of this segment. We've got to take some commercial break here, and we'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio. tonight.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And we have got so much to talk about here. We're going to go into the economic news. It's not very good, as you were hearing some of the stuff on the break here. Right now, the rate of bank charge-offs, this is loans that the banks have given out, and they're not getting the money back. They're having to basically just charge it off and say, this is a bad debt. We have to let it go. We can foreclose and resell and everything, but we're not making our interest on it. The rate of bank charge-offs in the United States today has just surpassed the record set during the Great Depression. And I'm not talking absolute levels where people say, oh, well, it's a much larger company, a country and many more banks and so forth. I'm talking about the percentage. The percentage. A larger percentage of bank loans are being charged off today than at the peak set during the Great Depression. So Joe Biden is right. We're in a depression. The government, the corporate news are going to try and tell you, no, we're in a recovery. Everything's fine just because you're not working. That's your fault. But the economy's doing wonderful. Look at all the bonuses the Goldman Sachs people are going to. You can't look at that and tell me the economy isn't recovering, so forth and so on. Meanwhile, Capmark Financial Group, the lender owned by companies including Goldman Sachs and KKR, filed for bankruptcy protection after posting a second quarter loss of about $1.6 billion. Their total indebtedness is $21 billion. And you know what's really kind of interesting? Because this goes back to that thing we just heard in the news break, where they're talking about how the Dow Industrials had a really bad day. They started out great, way, way up soaring, and then about one-third of the way through, just this big plunge down to the bottom till it hit the stops. And the programmed buying kicked in to keep it from going any further and just stayed that way for the rest of the day. And they're saying, well, it's because, you know, bad news on home mortgages. And it just underscores the fact that our entire economy is valued not on productivity, but on how deeply they can plunge the people into debt. Have you noticed that? They love housing prices to go up because it means you, to buy a home, have to go more deeply into debt. That's what the entire economy is based on, the enslavement of the people. The more they can dig that hook into you and soak you for, the better the economy seems to be. Forget about productivity and actually making anything for sale. Oh, no. The economy's doing great. If we have you plunged deeply into debt, so deep you will never, ever get out for the remainder of your life, which, by the way, is a big part of the reason for all this bailout stuff and the Federal Reserve handing out the money and refusing to even say where it's going. Because ultimately, you are on the hook by royal decree of the Congress and the President. You are on the hook for all that money the Federal Reserve is handing out willy-nilly and refusing to say where it goes. $27 trillion so far. You're on the hook for that. You divide that by 300 million and see how much you are now on the hook for. And the more debt they can pile on you, the happier they are. Because that's what the economy is based on. It's not based on wealth and productivity. It's based on debt. Getting you into debt, keeping you in there, and making you a slave to that debt. And it works only as long as you believe it. Only as long as you believe it is valid. As long as you believe that you are responsible for debts created by corporations and government for you to pay off, then you are their slave. Period. End of discussion. You are as much a slave as those people who spent their entire lives absolutely convinced in the reality and truth of rule by divine right. That was how the tyrants of medieval Europe kept control. They didn't really have soldiers living in everybody's house, contrary to the BBC's television show Robin Hood. The reality was the serfs of medieval Europe were kept slaves by their belief, as taught to them by the church, that the kings and nobility ruled with the consent and blessing of God. And if you went against them, you would go to the dark place and spend the rest of eternity boiling and broiling and watching reruns of My Mother the Car. So it only works as long as you believe in this constructed reality. Are we liable for debts the government has created that we didn't agree with? I don't think so. International law recognizes the concept of the onerous debt. Money that the government borrows to make our country better for us, to take care of our infrastructure, that's a legitimate debt. And I'm willing to pay taxes to support that. And to pay those bills back. But money spent on war, money spent on surveillance to keep us under control, money given to Israel in defiance of the Symington Amendment to the Foreign Appropriations Act, money given to Wall Street, from which they then turn around and pay themselves record-setting bonuses, I don't agree that we're liable for that. Why should we pay for that? We didn't agree with it. We told Congress a year ago, do not do this. And Congress went ahead and did it. And now we're expected to pay it back. That is taxation without representation, because they're taking taxes from us and they are not listening to what we think the money should be spent on. I think our taxes should go for schools and education and taking care of our children. And if the Army wants a big new bomb, let them go down to the front of the supermarket and start selling brownies to raise money for it. That's the way it should work, instead of the system we have now where all of our money goes to things that kill brown people around the world, and our schools are begging money and holding bake sales for basic supplies. It's absurd how topsy-turvy this society has become. Now, we have this little article, and I've got it linked to the front page of whatreallyhappened.com. It says, experts see rebounding economy shedding jobs. Do you hear the little message in there? The economy is rebounding, even though it's losing jobs. And the tagline inside is, forget a jobless recovery. The economy is entering a recovery with more job losses. Okay, for whom is the economy recovering if we're still losing our jobs? Obviously, it's recovering for people like Goldman Sachs. By the way, there's an interesting little scandal involving some bonds. The state of New Jersey got stuck with $1 million a month for these credit, these interest swap things that happened on bonds, and it turns out the bonds never really existed. It was just a paper play. And now the taxpayers of New Jersey are stuck on that one. And again, Goldman Sachs is behind it all. So Goldman Sachs is making money. The Bernie Madoffs of this world, they're making money. And, of course, Congress is getting tithed their appropriate percentage. So they're all happy. The economy's working for them. The money is flowing towards them. And the fact that Americans, by the tens and hundreds of millions, are losing their jobs and losing their homes and are going hungry and going without medical care, well, we can't, you know, why should we waste our beautiful minds on that kind of thing? As long as we're getting the money, you know, the economy must be rebounding. You know, what's an acceptable level of unemployment? Well, I don't know. I've got a job. All my friends have a job. I guess that's pretty acceptable. So it's amazing. The dollar is at a 14-month low with no signs of stopping. Meanwhile, apparently Ben Bernanke is still refusing to tell Congress where much of this $27 trillion has gone. And, you know, it's funny, the Federal Reserve is sort of in this gray area where when they want to be part of government policy, they are, and when they want to be a private bank that's not accountable to anybody, they go and do that. And the bottom line is, all this money they're handing out, if it is not paid back by the people who got it, the bill defaults onto the American people, which gives us a right to know where this money is going. And more, we should have the right to say, don't do that. But neither Congress nor the Federal Reserve are listening to us. It is time to fire both of them, along with Keith Olbermann's wanting to fire the bankers. And he's right. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here. Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Call Mike now at 866-582-9933. 866-582-9933.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about. I'm getting some email coming in now. More on that story about New Jersey taxpayers are being stuck paying $1 million a month to Goldman Sachs on these credit default swaps on bonds that never really existed. And we're going to be putting this up at whatreallyhappened.com and getting a little bit more into detail. I've got a lot more economic news to cover, but we've got a caller on the line, Rick in Kansas. Aloha, Rick. Welcome to the show. What is on your mind today?
Thank you, Mike. I'll be quick. I just wanted to have you clarify something that I thought I heard you say and blew my mind. I thought I heard you say that Israel is now admitting they have nuclear weapons, but they didn't make them. They bought them, and that's why they don't have to follow any of these rules or guidelines from the international community.
that's what we're seeing being posted to the blogs by a lot of these paid operatives that Israel's Interior Ministry has hired to go out there and try and counter some of the explanations. I think the bottom line here is Israel realizes they cannot realistically deny the existence of the nuclear weapons anymore, and even though the United States officially refuses to acknowledge them, that just common sense and Mordecai Vanunu's photos are basically telling her, yeah, they've got them. We've caught a lot of Israel's leaders basically dropping hints that they've got them. It's an open secret, and I think Israel has realized they can't go on pretending they don't exist. They may be looking back at the fall of the Soviet Union, where the Soviet Union originally tried to pretend that that Chernobyl had not happened. And, of course, everybody knew it had happened. The radiation meters all over Europe had gone completely wacko bananas. They knew something bad had happened. And it was at that point that Mikhail Gorbachev was able to come out and say, look, we can't do this denial game any longer. Nobody believes us. It's time for the glasnost. That's how that all got started. And he said, yeah, we've had a really bad accident, and we need all the help we can get. And that was kind of the beginning of the opening up of the Soviet Union, and the old hardline USSR began to fade away, and so forth and so on. So Israel, especially as they grapple with this Goldstone report, they may have realized that continuing to pretend they don't have nuclear weapons is raising on a busted flush. So now they're trying to go out there and find some way that they can spin their having nuclear weapons with continuing to receive U.S. foreign aid and not having to sign the NNPT or submit to inspections. It's all nonsense, of course. You know, the rules are very clear, and both the U.S. and the U.N. asked Israel to sign the NNPT and submit to inspections this year. Israel told them to go jump in a lake. And the bottom line here is, and this is probably a big reason why the war with Iran has just fizzled, over this new Russian enrichment deal, it's very obvious to the world. Iran is playing by the rules, and Israel is not.
Thank you for explaining that.
You got it. Thanks a lot for the phone call, and please call in again. All right, we're going to skip on back to the economy here a little bit. Pacific Gas and Electric customers in California, boy, they're having such a hard time in California. I've got so much sympathy for them, except for the governor. As part of this whole let's fight global warming and let's be green and so forth and so on, Pacific Gas and Electric customers have started to undergo a conversion from their old electrical meters that had to be read by a human being coming around looking at the little needles to these new smart meters that can be read remotely by a van driving by on the street, and it just pings a little radio signal off the meter, and the meter sends back the information, and they're able to read all the meters much more efficiently and cost effectively, so forth and so on. Unfortunately, it turns out that these meters are reading quite a bit differently than their predecessors, and Californians are saying their electric bills have doubled since the installation of the new meters. They've gone before the California Public Utilities Commission to complain, but the Utilities Commission still will not order PG&E to suspend the installation of the new meters. And these Californians are saying, we're not using any more electricity, but these new meters are making us pay twice as much for the electricity we are using. And PG&E is going, well, maybe the old meters were wrong. And so it's kind of a covert backdoor rate hike on the people of California. And you know something? This is going to be a common phenomenon. You're going to see it everywhere around you, that the government and corporations' solution to their economic woes is to figure out ways to sell you less while charging you more. You're already seeing it in the supermarket. Packages are getting a little smaller and a little smaller and a little smaller. You know, boxes of crackers are going from 10 ounces to 8 ounces, and the price is going up. Little, very subtle changes. Rolls of paper products are getting a little thinner. And they'll put new improved formulation to say, oh, okay, it's smaller because they changed something. It isn't. They're basically going to make you pay more for less. And by the way, historically, that has been the goal of every single government in history, to extract the most work product, meaning money, from their population while providing the absolute least amount for their care. And governments will get away with that as long as the people allow it to happen. So you need to keep in mind that if you are getting fed up and tired with the quality of life in this country, what it costs versus what you're getting, the government's never going to change it because they love it when it goes this way. because it means more money for marble palaces and monuments to their own glory and things that go bang and kill brown people. No government in history has ever stood up to its people and said, you know something? We're taxing you way too much, and we're sorry. We're going to cut taxes in half and give you back your money. No government has ever done that. The only time that taxes get significantly reduced, I'm not talking about a token, ooh, half a percent here and a new tax credit here that's designed to make you think that you're getting some kind of a deal. The only time there is a major reduction in taxes is when the government gets changed and its debts are thrown out with it. And that's the biggest problem that faces the American people. Our government has run up more debt than we could all pay in 20 lifetimes. And that's the reality. And now we've got to decide what to do about it. We know we got a government that's lying to us. We know we got a government that is spending far more concern about Israel than it does about this country. We've got a government that is out there spending trillions of dollars and the lives of your children on wars against Israel's enemies. How long are you going to live with this stuff? How long are you going to put up with it? Apparently not all that much longer, because we're seeing this video from this ABA meeting in Chicago, the American Bankers Association. There was a very angry protest outside, enough to where the ABA conference goers inside were very nervous, and a lot of them were asking for protection to get from the conference back to wherever they needed to get to. So that's starting to get surfaced there. We have an article actually showed up today. We've got it linked at whatreallyhappened.com that says, bring back the guillotine for Goldman Sachs and Company. And this guy is out there talking about, when he's talking about what's going on, and he starts joking about, you know, it's time to bring back the guillotine for the bankers, and people are cheering. We have reached that point where at least the public is willing to concede that the bankers and government are just ripping us off. They don't care about the long-term economy. In the last year, they have not done a single thing consistent with the long-term recovery and restoration of the economy. For the last year, they have been following the words of wisdom we have on a coffee cup over here, that the last official act of any government is to loot the nation. They know it's going to come apart. They know they've borrowed too much money. They know they have lied to the people way too much. The United States is an empire in decline, on the verge of collapse, and they're just grabbing the silverware and heading for the door as fast as they can. And they're going to get all the silverware that you let them take. So you just need to keep that in mind here. Now, as an indication of just how bad things are getting out there, up in Detroit, remember after all the money, all the tax money that was dumped on the automotive industry to try and revive them, and that didn't work out very well, a huge foreclosure problem up in Detroit. Detroit attempted to auction 9,000 foreclosed properties off. Some of them went on the block for as little as $500 to buy a home in Detroit. At the end of the day, 80% of the properties had not been bid on. That is how completely out of control and devastated the heartland of this country is. We're going to take a break for some commercials. We'll be back with the last segment of hour number one of the What Really Happened radio show after these words from our sponsors, 866-582-9933, 866-582-9933. We have got when pigs fly flu, and more Israel and Iran, and global warming coming up. We'll be right back.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
When all this twists and steel, was swept away, did these remaining holes reveal what's really?
to Aloha America. Welcome back to the show here. You know, I was just listening to Alex Jones talking about the smart grid technology. And basically what it is we were talking about this with these PG&E meters. It's just another way to charge you more money for less product and less service. And in a way, it's very much like they used to have in the Soviet Union, where they had rotating blackouts so that they could delay building new power stations. There was one experiment in the central industrial area of the Soviet Union where they tried playing games with the phasing of the power and very slight undervolts to save money, and they wound up like melting a lot of equipment because electrical motors, the voltage is very critical to not having them burn out when you're running them. And just it's all game playing to try and get more money out of you for less product. And all this smart grid stuff is going to be that the government gets to say, all right, well, we don't have enough electricity to give you, so we're going to shut off, you know, whatever it is you're trying to turn on, especially those pesky what really happened server computers. They look at how much electricity they're using. We got to shut them off. And the bottom line here is it is just like the Soviet Union just before it collapsed. We can't run it all. We don't want to spend the money to run it all. We used to be the nation that had so much electricity and so much of everything for all the people. Where did it all go? Where did all the money go? One possibility, I know we got a caller on the line, but I'm going to get to you in a minute. We have had another dead billionaire show up, Jeffrey Pickower, who was one of the clients of Bernie Madoff with the loot, and he was found dead over the weekend. We are being told it was a heart attack, and he took a lot of the money that he got from Bernie Madoff and donated large amounts of it to these very to Jewish causes. And the article was bemoaning the fact that his personal foundation, the Pickower Foundation from Palm Beach, Florida, had to shut down because the largesse coming from Bernie Madoff with the loot was discontinued. But here's the interesting part people aren't covering. And I note that, again, the financial watchdogs of the United States government, including the Internal Revenue Service, don't seem all this interested. But according to Madoff's records, Jeffrey Pickower took something like $5 billion, with a B, dollars, out of the Madoff investment Ponzi scheme. And nobody knows where it went. It doesn't show up on Pickower's own books or those of the foundation. The money just disappeared. We don't know what they bought with it. We do know that a lot of Madoff's ill-gotten gains, obtained by basically screwing the American investors, a lot of that was given to these various Israeli charities, which turned around and funneled the money through AIPAC to buy the U.S. Congress. I've been saying this ever since the scandal broke. Bernie Madoff was the funding mechanism by which Israel subverted the United States federal government. And this Jeffrey Pickower appears to have been part of the conduit to the tune of some $5 billion in unaccounted for cash that went someplace. And there's a lot of deaths beginning to pile up around Bernie Madoff with the loot. We've got this Andrei Koslov, Seth Tobias, Paul Gilmore, and Oleg Zhukovsky. A lot of accidents in swimming pools taking place. You know, it's time to start having the Madoff dead bodies list, because it's starting to grow and be noticeable. All right, we're going to go to the phones. We've got Craig in Kentucky. Aloha, Craig. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind? Craig, are you there?
I wanted for you to comment on the FDIC and the assets now are down to a little more than half. Isn't that what they're saying?
What's worse than that? They're basically saying at the rate they're going now, they're basically going to be running out of money, and they're either going to have to go to the U.S. Congress for more bailout money or cash infusion, or they're going to have to raise their insurance rates on the remaining banks, which will probably push a lot more of them into the, you know, over the edge into insolvency.
Well, wouldn't that be a way to devaluate the currency, though, if they didn't have the money to pay everybody and just pay a percentage of the money that was in the bank?
I'd have to think about that a little bit. I mean, basically, the way to devalue the currency is to simply print up a whole bunch of new money to give to the FDIC to pour into these banks. But that's a big part of what's already going on with these cash infusions, because they can't actually take $27 trillion from the American people. They're just printing it up and putting it out there and saying it'll eventually be on the Americans' tax tab. The federal government, they're trying to figure out a way that they can, again, raise their legal debt limit. It's at $13 trillion now. They're talking about putting a little rider into this next defense appropriations bill to say, oh, yeah, we got to raise the limit that we can borrow again. But the bottom line is they can't balance their books. They're going deeper into debt. They're so deep they can't get out. I mean, the inevitable outcome of this has to be obvious to everybody. It's just a question of how far are the American people willing to let themselves get dragged down with an out-of-control, broke, fiscally reckless government that can't say no to anything Israel asks for with six zeros appended to the end of it.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter how much money you have in the bank, it's going to affect everybody, isn't it?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And a lot of people are trying to get their paper money out of the bank and convert it into something else, whether it's gold, silver, platinum, canned food, shotguns, whatever, and basically hang on to it as a wealth preservation mechanism. Of course, the bottom line there is the federal government could very easily declare private ownership of valuable metals to be illegal. They've done it once before during the last depression. And say, you got to turn it in, and we'll give you a whole bunch of paper money for it. And then the paper money becomes worthless. It's just another way of robbing the people.
Okay, I agree with you, Mike. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to bring that up. It was on the news, so I figure they're going to do something, or they wouldn't have it on mainstream media right now.
Yeah, mainstream media, we're still, they're talking about all kinds of weird stuff out there. And most of it is not really relevant. Now, speaking of the mainstream media, thank you very much for the call, by the way, Craig. Speaking of the mainstream media, over the last couple of days, over this last weekend, have you noticed how Iran has just sort of gone away? And there was a brief attempt to spin last Friday as a deadline that Iran had failed to meet. And then as it sort of became obvious that it was kind of an informal, would be nice to happen by Friday that Al-Baradei put out there, but there was no actual deadline, and all Iran had said is, we need a couple of days to look at this. We may have a counterproposal, which is perfectly reasonable. In any event, Iran is going to come back with something which probably the IAEA and the United Nations are going to say, yeah, we can live with this. And the case for war with Iran is basically dissolving. And this leaves the United States and Israel in serious trouble, because Israel is looking at war crimes trials, and the United States has got an economy that is falling apart. And everybody knows it was the U.S. government's own policies that created this economic mess. And so the war that Israel and the U.S. thought they were going to have to distract everybody has just gone away. Now, over the weekend, we saw Israel escalate the attempted provocation at the Al-Aqsa Mosque to basically try and trip off a new intifada. And the agenda here was very, very obvious. Israel, there was this extremist Jewish group that wants to tear down the Al-Aqsa Mosque and ship it to Mecca one pebble at a time. Real hateful stuff. Imagine if they said that about the Vatican. How would you feel? That should put it in context. And so the IDF went in to basically prevent all Muslims from going to the mosque, because there had been a call, please come to the mosque and protect us from these people who want to tear it down. And the IDF went in there with rubber bullets and tear gas, and it just got really, really ugly. And it seemed to be they were attempting to provoke a new intifada. Remember how the last one got started? Ariel Sharon, with an armed party, walked into the Al-Aqsa Mosque without permission. It was definitely thumb in the eye time. He wanted a reaction. And that's what Israel wanted this time. They wanted to have the Palestinians riot. They wanted to be able to say, oh, look at those barbarous people. They're doing all kinds of terrible, terrible things. And, destroy the public support for war crimes trials for Israel, because, oh, look, those Palestinians, they're barbarians. We don't need them. And, we don't need to listen to what they're saying. And it's the same game that Britain played in India, where they kept provoking the Indians to a response and riots, so that they could say, the Indians are barbarians, and they need the civilizing influence of British rule. And Gandhi said, no, we're just going to sit here and let you burn yourself out, and then you're going to have to go away, and that's what works. So I'm very grateful to the Palestinians who did not rise to Israel's bait. It appears that situation has abated. We're going to break for commercials and news. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors. Stay tuned. Aloha, America.
Once I built a railroad, made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a tower to the sun, brick and rivet and lime. Once I built a tower, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, gee, we look swell, full of that Yankee doodly-dum. A half a million boots went slogging through hell, and I was the kid with a drum. Why, say, don't you remember, they call me Al. Why, it was Al all the time. Why, say, can't you remember? Why, I'm your pal. Buddy, can you spare a dime?
To the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show for hour number two here. We're talking about Israel's attempt to possibly trigger a new intifada in Jerusalem at the Temple Mount with which to demonize the Palestinians, to destroy sympathy for them as a means of cutting United Nations support for the possible referral of Israel's war crimes to The Hague. Regardless of whether Israel ever stands trial for the war crimes, the fact is that the public image of Israel has been seriously damaged over the last year through Israel's own fault. I know they're screaming, oh, it's all the fault of these people and those people because we're wonderful and blah, blah, blah. But Israel has basically done a lot of very questionable things that are in defiance of international law. And their attitude problem toward the United Nations has only complicated the situation. They've been going around saying, you must bury the Goldstone Report. And they've created a political climate where even people who want to help them don't dare do it because they don't want to be seen as under the control of Israel's thumb. And so Israel's own arrogance has created this crisis. So, with the cause for war in Iran basically dissolving, and Israel not having anything else that it can do to distract the world from the Goldstone Report, I think their strategy was, we'll provoke a new intifada. The Palestinians will riot. We will take all kinds of video. We will have our slaves in the media around the world say, oh, those gosh darn Palestinians, look how terrible they are. Really, you know, they're defiling the Temple Mount now and so forth and so on. And so, again, I'm very glad, and I know that Steve over at Desert Peace had a great deal to do with this, of basically getting the word out, you know, got to play Gandhi on this one. Don't let Israel provoke you. Because they will use your anger against you to make you look bad, to destroy support for the war crimes trials, and more to the point, to support the idea that, yeah, it's time to scrape off the Temple Mount and send those nasty Islamic shrines back to Mecca or wherever they're supposed to be. And you know something? The joke really is on Israel and their fanatics there, because Israel's been very reckless with the archaeology. We know that there is no archaeological evidence for the Temple of Solomon at the Temple Mount. The only two items ever found, the pomegranate staff head and the Jehoash tablet, are both fakes, made by, we think, Oded Golan, and certainly confirmed as fakes by Israel's own antiquities authority. One of the reasons that there may be no archaeological evidence for the Temple of Solomon at the Temple Mount is starting to surface that the actual location for the Temple of Solomon was at a place called Gihon Creek, about a quarter of a mile away. And that big stone platform that is called the Temple Mount today is the remains of a Roman garrison that was built there on top of that hill, its commanding position, following the revolt of 70 AD, that it may in fact not have anything to do with either the first or the Herodian temples, that those were destroyed during the wars. And they're looking in the wrong place for proof of the temple's existence. And they're certainly killing a lot of Muslims over the wrong piece of real estate. And we know that Israel, in their desire to co-opt archaeology to support their political agenda, they've made some egregious mistakes. We now know that the archaeological evidence says that the story of the Exodus actually happened to the Hyksos, not the Hebrew. So that got a little bit co-opted. We know up at Masada, where they talk about this heroic self-sacrifice of the Jewish defenders, the problem is pig bones were found in those mass graves. Now, that's something Romans did all the time. They didn't care. But no self-respecting Jewish person would ever be interred with pig bones. So those bodies they found are dead Roman soldiers, not dead Hebrew defenders. And again, you know, we saw during Operation Cast Lead, the Palestinian Archaeological Museum was targeted. That was destroyed. Remember the story about the Palestinian traditional costumes? The handmade embroidered costumes magnificent collection was touring the world as an exhibit of Palestinian culture. When it got to Los Angeles, it simply disappeared. Everybody was pointing fingers at each other. But somebody stole, and presumably, since it never showed up again, destroyed the exhibit. And the reason is obvious. Israel does not want there to be any visible signs of a Palestinian culture, because Israel's whole idea is there really are no Palestinians. It was a land without any people. It was completely empty when we showed up, which, of course, is completely not true. And we've documented that with photographs all the time. So, you know, it's this situation of a clash of mythologies. And, you know, we actually have this Israeli general going around saying it's right for us to kill the Muslims and get them out of the West Bank because God says this is all ours anyway. I mean, Israel is dragging us back to the Middle Ages, where national foreign policy is being set on holy writ. Do we really want to go back to the Middle Ages? I frankly would prefer to live the rest of my life out here in the 21st century. The technology is cooler. So, you know, it's just, and I think this thrashing around, this ideological and mythological thrashing around, I think signals the degree of panic in Israel that they're losing their pristine public image that they've had for the last 60 years. And it's now become, you know, the screams of anti-Semitism are not going to discourage people from talking about what Israel has really done with the white phosphorus. And now we're seeing evidence there have been at least 2,000 instances of torture, known torture, in Israeli prisons for Palestinians in the last year alone. I mean, that's a scale way above what the U.S. was doing with Binyam Mohammed and the Guantanamo people and Abu Ghraib. And by the way, we know Israeli torturers were working in these American prisons. I guess when you care enough to scream the very best, you go to Israel. Now, let's see. Let's skip on down here. We talked about the torture. Israel has ruled out any review of the Cast-led operation. They're simply standing on the position that they are innocent, and the Goldstone Report is just this hideous anti-Semitic propaganda. And let's see. We talked about... the big surprise. This came through just before showtime. Palestinian president... Okay, I'm just reading in the room. Oh, we had a caller I missed. I apologize. Okay, my mistake. And I missed that in the control room feedback. Okay, so Stephen, I apologize. I hadn't seen you in the list. If you want to call back in, go ahead, and we'll go right to you when you call back in. Mohammed Abbas, Palestinian president, remember we've been speculating, why is he calling for elections? Because, you know, he just barely held on to power against Hamas. Was he planning on stealing the election? Was he getting the voting machines from Afghanistan, so forth and so on? And now came the surprise announcement. He has told Barack Obama that he, President Mohammed Abbas of the Palestinian Authority, is going to resign. He has basically said it is impossible to come to a peace agreement as long as Netanyahu is in power in Israel, which is probably accurate, We understand also, of course, that when Abbas went along with Netanyahu to say, yeah, we're going to hold off talking about the Goldstone report at the United Nations, that it destroyed his own support, even within the Palestinian Authority. So his position may simply be untenable. But he's announced his resignation. We don't have a date for him leaving. We don't know who is going to succeed him or if they're just going to hold open elections. If they hold elections with Abbas resigning, Hamas might win all of Gaza and unite it under a single political rulership. Israel and the United States are not going to like that at all, because their entire constant attack on Hamas is based on this illusion that they're not really the political representation for the Palestinian people, even though they won the election. With Abbas gone, Hamas stands to make some serious political gains here and unite Palestine. All right, moving on down here. As you have probably heard, there is a meeting coming up in Copenhagen in December, in which the leaders of the world, Obama's not going to be there, but the other leaders of the world representation, they're talking about signing a new treaty. It's an updated version of Kyoto, which includes provisions that basically surrender internal policy of these nations to a global environmental authority in order to combat anthropocentric global warming. Human-caused global warming, even though we're in one of the coldest winters on record, the Earth's temperature is chilling down, carbon dioxide levels are falling, and yet they're still trying to sell this one. The Associated Press, the same Associated Press that promised you Saddam had nuclear bombs, is out there with a story today, statisticians reject global warming, or global cooling, rather. And it's basically they're trying to say, we got a bunch of statisticians, they insist the planet is getting warmer. But, you know, statisticians are people who think that if you stick a man's feet in a block of ice and his head in a blast furnace, on average, he should feel okay. So, forget the statistics. Look out the window at the snow and ice. Make your own decisions. We'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Some are maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, just scratch yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And before we go, we got a caller on the line. Before I go to him, though, I wanted to follow up on the story we were talking about before about New Jersey's taxpayers getting screwed to the tune of $1 million a month by Goldman Sachs. Here's the deal. We just put the story up at whatreallyhappened.com. New Jersey taxpayers are sending $1 million a month to a partnership run by Goldman Sachs for protection against rising interest costs on bonds that the state redeemed more than a year ago. Now, this deal was apparently set up by Governor James McGreevy. You probably remember him. He was the one with the gay Israeli lover that he appointed to the head of the state's Homeland Security Department, and then something else happened, and McGreevy said, okay, yes, I've got this gay Israeli as my lover, and I'm stepping down, blah, blah, blah. Well, apparently one of the other things he did is he committed the state to this basically insurance protection on rising interest costs on these bonds. But the bonds were redeemed. They're paid off. They don't exist anymore. And yet the New Jersey taxpayers are still on the hook for $1 million a month to Goldman Sachs. With deals like that, no wonder Goldman Sachs is making money. With deals like that, why did they need us to bail them out a year ago? I mean, they're just raking the money. No wonder the average bonus for a Goldman Sachs employee this year is $500,000. I mean, they're just raking in the loot. You know, as far as, yeah, the economy's doing great for them. They've got money to burn, literally. It's just falling out of the sky like manna from heaven all over them. They got to think this is the greatest time in history for them. But for the rest of the country, who cares about them? Just hoi polloi. We don't need to worry about them. We're going to go to the phones. We've got Presbyter in, let's see, I'm looking at my cheat sheet here. Louisiana. Aloha, Presbyter. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Aloha Mike. It's L.A. as in Los Angeles. But you're close. Same basic landmass.
I got at least I got the continent right. Okay.
We got the continent right, man. We're good there. I have to comment on what you said before the break about statistics.
Yeah.
My favorite quote on statistics is from Homer Simpson, and he said, "You can prove anything with statistics. 40% of the people know that."
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Well, the comment I put on that story was, I've got a statistic as to how many statistics are in error, but I don't trust it, so I couldn't quote from it. But
exactly.
Basically, a statistician is the carbon-based life form equivalent of the computer predictive model. And again, it can't really predict anything. It merely shows the outcome of the basic assumptions going in there. But what's going on is everybody's looking out their window. Winter has come a month early. Carbon dioxide is actually decreasing. And here's something I found out just today. And I missed this all this time. I didn't realize it. Al Gore was basing his claims about carbon dioxide increasing right now based on measurements made at the meteorological station on Mauna Loa here in Hawaii. Now, Mauna Loa is the name of a volcano, and it's an active volcano. The Kilauea and chain of craters, that whole area, is on the south flank. Now, volcanoes are one of the most powerful natural sources of carbon dioxide on the Earth, and Al Gore is taking his readings from the top of that volcano and saying this proves that carbon dioxide is increasing in the Earth's atmosphere. Kilauea has only been erupting for the last 20 years. Gee, I wonder if maybe we've got a little more CO2 around that mountain than we would on other places around the Earth.
It's amazing.
It is, and now it's gone down. The Kilauea eruption is beginning to subside. Not surprisingly, the percentage of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, as measured at Mauna Loa, is going down. And, yeah, the data is against them. So now they're going to trot out all these experts and statisticians to convince you to ignore your own eyes and ears and nose and common sense and trust the pretty little graph. They're going to bring back the hockey stick. Trust us. We know the Earth is getting warmer, and you have got to pay for it.
Absolutely.
And they're going to be pushing. They're going to be hammering that as hard as they can between now and Copenhagen.
Keep the paying going on.
Mm.
The real reason I called, if you got a moment, I'll
sure.
keep going,
mm-hmm.
was you were talking about Israel's archaeological problems.
The problem is they don't have any archaeology.
Exactly.
You know, you go to Egypt, you go to Iraq, you go to Iran, you're tripping all over this stuff
exactly.
out there. And in Israel, it's like nothing. It's not there.
I think the thing that's really telling about the region is that at the turn of the 1900s to AD, that the culture was Greek. And the Greeks named the place. Now, they named it after the predominant culture of the time, the Philistines.
Yeah.
They called it Philistia. Philistia turned into Palestine.
That's exactly right.
Palestine is because the Philistines were the predominant culture, not the Israelites.
Correct.
It's like just the name proves that what they're saying is like everything else that they seem to trot out, manufactured out of whole cloth. Anyway,
Joe.
I'll call back.
Thank you.
Sometime soon.
Please do. Yeah, absolutely. Of course, you know, when you go back in history, everybody's lying. Everybody's lying. If you ever go to those, speaking of the Egyptian antiquities, if you go to the big temples at Karnak and Abu Simbel, and you're going to see these wonderful carvings of Ramses II. Ramses the Great, by his own admission, in his victory over the Hittites, and you see these wonderful stone carvings of the chariots running down the Hittite soldiers and crushing them under the wheels of the Pharaoh's mighty chariot and just taking all these prisoners and whacking off their heads and killing them and just this incredible victory. Of course, the reality is Ramses II didn't actually defeat the Hittites at Kadesh. It was a draw. In fact, Ramses got suckered into a trap by a couple of double agents working for the Hyksos, and the Hittites, and he almost lost his army, and as a matter of fact, signed what may be the world's first non-aggression treaty between Egypt and the Hittites. And it was after that that Ramses came back home and instead of making more war, started building all these buildings on which to proclaim what a wonderful guy he really was and how victorious he'd been in battle. And he did it with the sure and certain knowledge that the vast majority of Egyptians lacked the means to go up to Kadesh and find out what had really happened. And so he could just say whatever he wanted and get away with it. And so for anybody who tours ancient Egypt and they look at those temples, there in stone is proof from thousands of years ago that rulers will lie to their population. I have a stronger word that I use when I do this presentation in public, before a live audience. Rulers lie to their people, and they've been doing it all along. They lie to tell you you're great, the gods sit up nights to admire you, and we have the right to go over and kill these people and take their land and wealth. And it's the same game over and over and over again, whether it's Ramses II or Adolf Hitler or Stalin or George Bush or Benjamin Netanyahu. It's the same sick, twisted trick over and over again. We're going to take a break. We'll be back after these commercials. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. Going right back to the phones. Clarence in Oklahoma. Aloha, Clarence. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Well, probably water on the brain right now, but I don't know, you know, depending on what your mind is.
Okay.
And, I just really was taken by your statement about statistics.
Mm-hmm.
I heard that from a college professor here at University of Central Oklahoma, where I graduated from. And he had a little different take. If you put a man, if you took and put his foot in a pail of boiling water and the other foot in a pail of ice cubes, on the average, he should feel just fine.
Yeah, that's not original with me. That's, in fact, the version that I got about feet in a block of ice and head in a blast furnace. I think I got that from Robert Heinlein.
Yeah, that's probably where it comes from, you know.
Really, yeah.
Just the versions. But I want to also say that I remember when, and I think the quote is attributed to Harry Truman, was that there are lies, there are damn lies, and there are statistics.
Yeah, that's Harry Truman. And basically the idea was that statistics is such an arcane field of mathematics, you can make the outcome basically be anything that you want it to be.
Exactly.
Based on your assumptions. And like I said, it's the carbon-based life form version of the computer predictive model, where you're not really going to get an accurate prediction. You simply get the outcome of the basic assumptions going in. And for AP to basically hire these statisticians, basically however they choose to frame the data, they can make it look like there's anything going on. In fact, if you notice very carefully, all of the supportive material for human-caused global warming, all the charts and graphs stop about 2001, because it was at that point things started getting cooler. And, you know, whether it's the carbon dioxide from the volcano reducing or the Earth getting cooler, all the rest of that. I mean, if you're one of those kinds of people that believe that in a God that makes all things happen, then obviously this is God's way of saying booga booga to the global warming people. And you're full of nonsense and cut it out. So anybody who's supporting Al Gore and his people are going against the will of God, and you're all going to go to the dark regions and burn for whatever.
Well, yeah, I love that idea. Because you said, because that, Mike, you and I think so much alike, and we're right about the same age. We came through the same era, you know, and that's probably part of it. And I'm from a state that's the reddest of the red states.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel
well,
like
me
I'm
too. I'm from New Hampshire originally.
Yeah, but I feel like I'm, well, what's the word? I think old George Gobel said it best on Johnny Carson many years ago. He asked, you know, they were talking. He said, did you ever feel like the whole world was a tuxedo and you were a pair of brown shoes.
Well, I don't know if that had anything to do with Republican versus Democrat. It was just that sense that sometimes you just don't feel comfortable in your own planet. And, you know, I felt that. You know, it's like, you know, what is that? Remember Henry David Thoreau's marching to the beat of a different drummer? Well, my guy's on bagpipes, and that's just made things that much more complicated, so.
Who was it, the old guy that did Ahab?
Watch it with that old guy crap, okay?
Yeah, he did a song called Bagpipes, That's My Bag, you know. And
Well, we're wandering off the thing here. Anything else on your mind today?
But I tell you, one thing I will say, I talked the other day about how they rickety-do the numbers for everything, the government.
Yes.
The government takes the statistics, and they bend them, squeeze them, whatever they do, to get
what they want. That's exactly right. It's more propaganda. Statistics are another form of propaganda. And the bottom line is that all those people who signed on to Al Gore's carbon credit scam and the global government and global environmental agenda, they were all wrong. The Earth is getting colder. And even though they're trying to rebrand and say, well, it's all about climate change now, yeah, you guys were wrong. You were flat out wrong. And you want us to still go along with giving you more money and authority over our lives when you were wrong? I mean, look how bad the planet's being run right now. You want more power and authority? I don't think so. I think the solution is get rid of this idea of a global government, break things up into little tiny pieces, and let us manage our own necessities and needs and resources right here within eyeshot. You know,
absolutely.
State level only. The only reason to have a big super government is to play empire. And play empire with other people's children.
But to micromanage us, individual human beings, to make us, and they can bend their rules to whatever, to make us dance to their tune.
Well, that's basically it. Unfortunately, the downside of modern technology is they're able to micromanage people, and government always expands. Government is always going to expand. There's always another niece or nephew who needs a job, and they're always going to create another office of management of whatever. They're going to be checking for lint. Are we cleaning the lint traps in our dryers? Because it's a waste of energy if we don't. It'll come down to that.
Well,
I'll tell you what.
I'll say this before we go. I'll leave after this comment. I've heard, you know, they're gonna send the energy police into your houses, and I say, well, they have the authority to do that. And I'll say, where does that authority derive from? What about the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution? And
well, Obama will declare a national emergency for energy the way he just did for the flu.
And then they'll sweep away the Constitution, and then they can...
That's exactly right. The Constitution is a fond memory at this point, at least in the eyes of the federal government. If we're ever going to get the Constitution back, we're going to have to do it with a very thick coating of tar and feathers.
All I can say is, if it gets too bad, let the revolution begin. So
I think it's already started, to be very honest. I think future history is going to look back. They're going to look at radio shows like this one and Alex Jones and all the activity on the blogosphere, and they're going to realize that the foundation of the revolution is already happening. You know, the revolution, you know, by the time violence happens, you already know it's there. By the time the shot heard round the world was fired, it was already obvious that a revolution was on the way.
Oh, yeah.
I think we're at that stage right now.
Several years up to that point, you know.
Yeah, same thing with the French Revolution. Before the violence actually broke out, it was, anybody walking around would have said, yeah, it's on the way here. The only exception to that, of course, is Romania, which as far as anybody on the outside could see.
That was a quick one.
Yeah, it appeared to be just, everything was fine. They were okay with all the TV cameras on the street corners and stuff. And then 2 weeks later, Ceausescu was machine gunned to death on Romanian national television.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway.
I'll get off and make way for other callers and everything. So,
well, thank you very much.
Okay, talk.
Have a good one. Clarence, thanks a lot, and call in again here. All right, we're going to cover some computer stuff here. We're almost to the end of the show here. We are hearing some bad things about Windows 7. As you know, at the beginning of the show, I was talking up this Navigon GPS thing for the iPhone. It really works very well, which proves it can be done for those who care to do it well. But we're getting warnings now that people are saying, consumer watchdogs are saying, wait a year before you get into Windows 7 because there are so many problems with it that it's going to take a year before it is even really usable at this point. We are hearing from various enterprise security experts that Windows 7 has huge, huge security holes in it that should have been known, should have been plugged, but they're there. It's very easy for people to break into it. And if that wasn't bad enough, we're just now finding out that the cable modems used by Time Warner Cable also have a huge security hole in them that allows intruders to basically come in, get past the firewall, and get into your computer system. Who knows? Maybe this stuff is intentional. I mean, the government is terrified of the Internet, and maybe these companies are being approached to intentionally leave these trapdoors in there for the government to use. Wouldn't be the first time it happened. There was a scandal involving a company called Crypto AG in Europe. When we come back, I'll give you that little bit of history so that you can understand where I'm coming from with this speculation. We're going to take a break. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something, by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone. I mean, the panic is on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. Last segment of our show today. We've got a caller on the line, Ty from Alabama. Aloha, Ty. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind? Hello? Okay, going once. Okay, I guess Ty must have hung up there. Okay, well, we were talking before about some of the problems with the computers that we're seeing, all these security holes and everything, and wondering if possibly these trap doors or these openings were in there deliberately. And I mentioned a company called Crypto AG. This was a European company. At the close of World War II, there was a very famous German encryption machine called the Enigma. And you've seen it in the movies. It was this wonderful German encryption machine. And it took the Allies a tremendous amount of time and effort and the lucky capture of an actual machine from a submarine, from a German U-boat, to finally be able to break the code. And at the end of the war, the U.S. government made presents of captured German Enigma machines to our allies around the world, not bothering to mention that the U.S. government and the British working together were able to now read any messages encoded on these machines. See, this is what friends are for. Now, a company in Europe, Crypto AG, set themselves up to manufacture and sell a commercial version of the German Enigma machine. It was a little more modern, still mechanical, very much based on the same technique of the rotor wheels and so forth. And eventually they transitioned to an electronic version. At that point, they were approached by the United States National Security Agency, which paid the owner of Crypto AG an undisclosed but very large sum of money to deliberately weaken the system in such a way that the U.S. government could read the messages encrypted with it. Okay, that was one example. Does everybody remember the Clipper chip they were trying to force on everybody? Where we're going to have a key escrow where you will use Clipper encryption and the keys will be split and these people will get one and these people will get one and that way there'll never be any abuse. And what they wouldn't tell you is that with the Clipper algorithm, if you had one of the two keys, you could deduce the other key with enough computer power, which the NSA has got tremendous amounts of it. Remember when digital encryption first showed up on cell phones and it was a 16-bit binary key? And the first generation phones that went out, the 8 high-order bits were always set to 0. So finding the key by brute force became a much, much simpler task. I mean, on and on and on we get. When DES was first being proposed as a digital encryption standard, there was an additional packet put into the encoded data called a work reduction packet. This was the encryption key used to encode the message, re-encoded with a key to which only NSA had the decryption key. And, of course, we all know about NSA key built into the Windows cryptographic structure as well. So this is the way the government likes to play. And now, of course, they're out there promoting PGP, and PGP is very useful. and it's a good consumer-level encryption. But remember, breaking a code and getting into somebody's traffic and messages, it's a two-step process. You have to figure out the methodology first, and that can be the hard part. Once you have the methodology, finding the key is just a matter of brute force. Once the Allies got hold of an actual Enigma machine and understood the methodology, then Alan Turing's, they called it the bomb because it was making all this ticking sound, but his little mechanical calculator could find the encryption keys by brute force at Bletchley Park. Okay? So if you're using PGP or any other commercially available encryption system, NSA or anybody else who wants to read your messages, they already know the methodology. Finding the key is just a matter of brute force. So I mention this only because the U.S. government has a long history of paying to open holes into your private systems. And maybe that's where this very obvious security flaw in the Time Warner cable routers comes from, and why they're having all these security problems reported with Windows 7. It may simply be that the government has gone in and said, you guys have to leave these things open because we've got to be able to get in there and make sure that Osama bin Laden is not living on the hard drive of XYZ user. Or more to the point, so that the Recording Industry Association of America and the Motion Picture Producers Association of America can come in and scan your hard disk and make sure that you're not looking at any movies that you haven't properly paid to look at. So, and the bottom line is real criminals, real terrorists, and real pirates who are really dedicated to doing this kind of stuff, none of this stuff is going to stop them. This is just about keeping you, the slaves, in your place. All righty, we are moving toward almost the end of the hour. Let's see. Already talked about the global warming disaster. We talked about Harry Reid apparently officially acknowledging that Israel does have a nuclear capability here. Barack Obama's poll ratings, we all know they're dropping. It's the worst rating drop in 50 years. The decline in Barack Obama's popularity since July has been the steepest of any president at the same stage of his first term for more than 50 years. Well, let's see. He broke every one of his campaign promises. We're stuck in two wars. He's trying to start a third one, and he's handing what little is left of the wealth of the people to Wall Street. You know why the economy's in trouble? I mean, the economy is so messed up, the rich have run out of more money to steal from us. That's how bad the economy is right now. That, you know, that's when it goes from a recession to depression. Recession means there's still some pennies out here the rich can steal. When there are no more pennies to steal, then it's officially a depression. I guess that's the new line here. Let's see. We talked about the Israeli army judge saying that the Bible gave all of the land to Israel, therefore it's legal for them to kill the Palestinians and kick them out. You know, I seem to recall in the book of Jeremiah, the Old Testament, chapter 3, which is also in the Torah, that God took Israel away from the Jews because they were sinners. So this idea that God gave this land to them, yeah, he did, then he took it back. That's the other side of that coin. You know, yeah, God gave it to you. You messed up. He took it away. And that's where we are right now. Talked about the torture. Talked about Israel has decided they don't need to reinvestigate Cass Lead. They know they were innocent. And let's see. Okay, interesting story from the World Health Organization. First of all, there's more and more stuff about the swine flu vaccine. We found out that Barack Obama's own daughters are not going to be given the swine flu vaccine. They're apparently not in the risk group, the risk group being anybody with an adjusted family income of under $100,000 a year. So we've seen these memos just surface from the World Health Organization, supposedly from back in 1972, that explained how to use vaccines as a method of population control. Now, remember, in 1974 is when Henry Kissinger prepared a document for President Richard Nixon that basically set forward as a national policy goal of the United States the reduction of population in the third world, because overpopulation in the third world was deemed a strategic threat to the interests of the United States, because those pesky people in those third world countries were just using up all those natural resources that we were eventually going to need, whether it was timber or croplands or coal or oil or whatever else that they were using that we were going to need, and therefore, at least in Henry Kissinger's point of view, this gave us the right to go in there and control their population. And one of the ways they did it, there was evidence that this series of typhoid vaccinations that were being given to women only by the World Health Organization. And it was very suspicious because it was a series of several shots over a couple of months. And it raised question marks because there was already a typhoid vaccine that's a single shot, boom, you're done, get out of here. And that was the end of it. And all of a sudden they were playing with these multiple shots. So they come to find out what these shots were really doing was tricking the women's bodies into viewing their own pregnancies as an infection so that the body's immune system would basically destroy the pregnancy and the woman would miscarry. And this was being done covertly without their permission around the world as part of a plan, to control third world population. Everybody talks about Hitler and he's killing people and he wants a purebred Aryan race. He got all of his ideas from the United States. In the 1930s in the U.S., there was this huge movement called eugenics, which was, we're going to promote the superior gene pools and we're going to thin out the inferior gene pools with superiority and inferiority rather arbitrarily decided. And so that's where this came from, and it looks like it's still going on very covertly. So now a lot of people are starting to wonder, this new series of vaccines for swine flu, might it have an ulterior motive? Yeah, it very well could. We can't rule it out based on the history of the United States. All right, that's it for our show today. We'll be back tomorrow night, 5 o'clock here on the Genesis Communication Network. Same time, same channel. Tune in tomorrow. And Aloha, America.